is William Hammond. Today's date is February 16th, 1973. The time is 1:30 p.m. I will be interviewing Mr. A.B. Hickey of Great Lakes Express Trucking Company. Topics to be discussed are company background, labor union transition, and important historic events and people of Great Lakes Express.
You have asked the question about how was the company formed, making reference to Great Lakes Express Company. Great Lakes itself came about on January the 1st, 1960, with the merger of Doyle Freight Lines and Blair Transit Company. These two companies, of course, were formed many years prior to that as follows. Mr. Doyle founded Doyle Freight Lines in 1916 with a one truck operation, as he would say, a butter and egg man, running between Hemlock, Michigan and Saginaw. And Blair Transit Company was formed in March of 1927 by Mr. Blair and his sister in Bay City, Michigan, with the territory served by Blair being between Bay City and Bad Axe. Through the years, both companies had purchased other companies which extended their rights to states other than Michigan. Doyle Freight Lines, having purchased Michigan Interstate Motor Freight in 1942, which gave them the rights to serve Toledo, Chicago, and southwestern Michigan, interstate only. Blair Transit Company made several purchases of small carriers, mostly serving the Thumb of Michigan area and Detroit, the largest being Armstead Truck Line, bought in 1935, who served Detroit and Port Huron, with their home terminal being Bad Axe, which then gave Blair Transit the authority to serve southeastern Michigan. Then in 1957, Blair Transit purchased Hollywood Cartage Company of Detroit, which extended their authority to Cleveland, Akron, Canton, Youngstown, Ohio, and western Pennsylvania.
Could I ask the question of which firm was larger at the time of the merger, Blair or?
Doyle Freight Lines was the larger of the two carriers at the time of merger. Now, I base that not in number of pieces of equipment, but in dollar revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
How was the name Great Lakes Express decided upon?
Well, that was decided one day when we had what we would call our regular weekly board meeting, and we were wondering if what the name of the new company should be, whether it would be known as Blair Doyle or Doyle Blair or a new name, and of course serving in the Great Lakes area, someone, and I don't recall who, came up with Great Lakes Express, and that was the name that was accepted. Of course, you know, times have changed as we progressed. There was another real large purchase, by Great Lakes Express in 1968, where we bought ACE Freight Incorporated, which served to the East Coast, New York metropolitan area, all of the states of Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island, and some New York points upstate, along with Dixie Ohio Express, which served from Buffalo, New York on the north to Birmingham, Alabama, and Atlanta, Georgia on the south. The ACE part was not by any means financially sound. We was unable to make it pay its way. Subsequently, it was disposed of, and the Dixie Ohio Express was very profitable and maintained, and was merged into Great Lakes Express January the 1st, 1973. So now we have a company that is serving Syracuse, New York on the east, Chicago, Illinois on the west, Cadillac, Michigan on the north, and Birmingham, Alabama, and Atlanta, Georgia on the south, with some special authority to points south of both Birmingham and Atlanta on certain items. As previously stated, the Blair Transit Company was founded in Bay City, Michigan, but when they purchased the Armstead truck lines, they then moved their offices to Bad Axe in 1936. Many people today will not recall, but those were the years coming out of the Depression, and the going was really tough. That was the year that I went to work for the company, and we got $10 a week, unlimited hours. But also, I recall very vividly that I paid $3 a week for my room, board, and washing. So I really had $7 left, and I recall of buying a used car and paying for it at that time.
And what exactly year was that?
36. But in 1937, Mr. Blair and Mr. Doyle formed a relationship, and Blair Transit Company moved to Saginaw. And Mr. Doyle had built on Davenport Street a terminal, which would have been located on the parking lot just of the present Saginaw Terminal of Great Lakes. And at that time, there was something like 17 or 18 carriers operating in and out of that terminal, which was known as the United Truck Lines Terminal. And a cartage company did the pickup and delivery work for each carrier, and they were charged for the cartage services, billing rating included, by United Truck Lines. And then one by one, of course, these companies were absorbed by other carriers. And today, outside of Great Lakes Express, there is Short Freight Lines in Bay City and Malvina Truck Line of Alpena, with a terminal in Saginaw, are about the only carriers left that was also in existence at that time in Saginaw.
Although we're concentrating on Great Lakes Express, could you maybe give me a little background on Blair, since you had originally started with that company, and they must be a long time firm in the area also?
Yes, I was going to get to that next. Blair Transit was formed by Mr. Blair and his sister, and his sister passed away in 1937, leaving the company, of course, to Mr. Blair, who at that time worked on the dock and drove truck and was president of the company all at the same time, and who, of course, is now chairman of the board of Great Lakes Express Company and still active, although he has reached retirement age.
That company was formed in what year?
The company was formed in 1927. So really the two people that were basically responsible for Great Lakes Express was Mr. D.C. Doyle Sr. and Mr. W.C. Blair. Mr. D.C. Doyle Sr., of course, having passed away in 1971 with a number of the Doyle children active in Great Lakes Express, with Mr. Harold Doyle being our president. You have asked the question regarding about the union and what part it played in our company. Having been on both sides of the fence in this case, because I did work as a driver and on the dock when unions first came in, and I became a member of the Saginaw Local in 1938, and was a member for a good many years thereafter. We would be kidding ourselves if we said that we should have never had unions, from the standpoint that you would be able to handle all of the employees' gripes or grievances, as they are known. Because with the union, you handle them collectively, and you're dealing with the union itself, the business agent, and the union steward or stewards involved.
Was the union established at the time that you first got into trucking?
The union was established at that time in the larger cities, but I don't recall of it before that time in Saginaw. As I recall, they came to Saginaw, and I guess came to probably United Truck Lines because of the large terminal we had with all these companies involved, and started signing up individuals into the union. And the union has been very, very good for the employee.
Were there any particularly difficult times of unions establishing themselves?
Sure, there were difficult times, and there's been strikes and lots of heated arguments. This is a part of the of what goes on in labor negotiations. Even today, I won't say that I ever recall of having any actually fights or any injuries because of resistance on either side. But there was resistance to the point of where we had strikes and were out of business for several days on several different occasions. Unionism in trucking isn't any different than in the automotive business or elsewhere. It has grown with the industry. Their demands have been great, and they have been met by increased freight rates. In our case, somebody has to pay, and subsequently it's the consumer who pays. I don't even recall what the rate per hour was when we were first organized, but I assume it was 40 or 50 cents per hour with no fringe benefits. And today, fringe benefits represent about 35% of the wage paid. The employee don't see that in his weekly check, but it's there in paid insurance, health, welfare, pension, holidays, including your birthday, which is now a holiday in the contract.
What would the average wage payment be now at this time?
The average pay now for those directly in handling of freight is somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 per hour. Some over and some under, depending upon what they are actually doing. And of course, we also maintain garages in several cities and garage rates where we have skilled mechanics are approaching $6.50 per hour. This is base pay with the fringe benefits of about 35% on top of that.
It's been a significant increase coming through the years.
Yes. Truck drivers themselves, by the way, many of them will earn upwards of $25,000 per year. And that is large money. But you have to remember this. Those drivers can live 60 hours per week. And that many of them, when they come on duty Sunday night and depart from their home domicile, are gone for 5, 6, and sometimes 7 days without getting back home. And during that time, they are allowed to work 60 hours. The balance of that time is off-duty time spent in motel or hotel, which the company pays for, but they are not furnished meals unless they are away from home on a holiday or on Sunday. I say that because it might be their seventh consecutive day they would be furnished meals also. I do not work in labor any longer, so I'm not positive on that statement. But if you want to take their total hours worked and all the time that is spent away from home and compare that to their approximately $25,000, you'll find out that those earnings aren't really large, that sometimes the man that stays to home and gets some daily overtime will be further ahead in dollars at the end of the year than the road driver. You spoke about vehicles. In 1936, when I first came to the industry, a 22-foot trailer was large. But there were tractor and trailer units at that time. And this was just after pneumatic tires came into being. Prior to that, they had used hard rubber tires. There were no trailer brakes. They were mechanical brakes on the power unit. I made my first trip to Detroit driving a Federal, and these are no longer manufactured.
Federal truck.
That's right. Federal truck manufactured in Detroit. and the top speed on that unit was 28 miles an hour.
As opposed to now?
Right now, we're gearing our units for about 68 miles an hour. We design our runs for about 500 miles per one tour of duty, which means the driver can drive 10 hours and he has to average 50 miles per hour to do this, which with the present day interstate system can be done.
Speaking of the interstate system, what were the road conditions at that particular time? I imagine 28 miles per hour was the absolute maximum.
Well, the truck wouldn't go any faster than that. The road conditions were not bad between Saginaw and Detroit, for example. We had what is known as old US 10. It had its four lanes, two southbound and two northbound. Saginaw through Flint via the Dart Highway down to Pontiac, and then we would take what was called the Pontiac Cutoff and go around Pontiac and come back onto Woodward Avenue. And Woodward Avenue is the same today as it was then. Really some foresight in whoever laid out Woodward Avenue, because that is four lanes northbound and four southbound, dating back to 1936. Of course, at that time, the interurban run between Detroit and Pontiac, the middle section, which really now is the boulevard type, where it has been planted with grass and trees.
So Woodward Avenue, what you're saying, was the same then as it is now?
Identically the same. We would go on Woodward Avenue to 8 Mile Road and then to Livernois Avenue and Livernois to Michigan, and our terminal was at Michigan and 24th for a good many years. But the interstate system has changed much of that. In fact, we are now on the near east side of Detroit, and I-75 goes across the back end of our present property in Detroit. In fact, the federal government and state bought that property from GLX.
Yes.
So we ended up with a very, very ideal location in Detroit, unknowingly, when we bought the property several years before we ever developed it. And then, of course, I-675 came through Saginaw, which means our drivers can leave the Saginaw terminal and go west three or four blocks and reverse direction onto State Street and onto 675 and drive to Detroit now in less than 2 hours with the heaviest load we can load on a vehicle.
That's ironic that Great Lakes Express should have the expressway come right through their backyard.
Yes.
Convenient. Was there any particular political pull involved there? Or?
No, I'll say we've had none, because there was to be a settlement on that property, and the Saginaw News had it published one time that we got our settlement with the state and federal government for $600,000+, and this was well over a year ago, but we don't have the money yet. I'm not sure that we ever will. It takes time, and that's part of politics.
Right.
But back in those days, when we had really a single axle trailer, we weren't confronted with the weight restrictions that we have today, but with a 22-foot trailer, you couldn't get what we would term overloaded anyway. But as we progressed in equipment, trailers got so they had either electric or vacuum brakes. The power units come along with hydraulic brakes with boosters on, and we really got so we could stop the vehicles other than by controlling the movement, basically through shifting of the transmission.
Downshifting.
That's right. So we've certainly gone a long, long, long way in equipment. Of course, those days there were no diesels. Great Lakes Express didn't go into diesels until 1962. And today we have 271 diesel line haul power units with at least a couple of hundred city pickup and delivery diesel units. Trailers, of course, have gone to a maximum length in the area we serve of 45 feet can have multi-axles under them, where you can actually gross in Michigan in various what they call trains up to about 157,000 pounds. You are allowed a maximum of 11 axles under a unit or a combination of units in Michigan, and there's no other state has this. So really the manufacturers, whether they are manufacturers of tractors or of trailers, have to build a unit for Michigan and then units for the other 49 states. Some people don't understand why that is, but that is the way it is. And very peculiar that Michigan would be the one and only state that would allow this multi-axle combination.
I was wondering, while I was studying in the library, I noticed a transportation guide and booklet, and it described the amount of taxes that the trucking industry pays per year per vehicle. And I was wondering, at the time you originally came into trucking, what the tax situation was then, and how it has progressed through the years.
Well, it's like your home taxes and all other taxes. It has progressed little by little. I don't recall of any tax other than a license plate that had to be bought for a vehicle in the state of Michigan in 1936. Of course, after that came along sales tax, gas tax, state gas tax, federal gas tax. I guess I should be saying fuel tax because it applies to diesel as well as gasoline. And so many other taxes that, not being a tax man, I couldn't name them all.
Mm-hmm.
There's a federal highway use tax that we are involved in. There's two states that we serve in where they have an axle tax, Ohio and New York. You pay a tax for every mile driven in those states. If you use the toll roads in those states, as we do, then all the miles that is driven on the toll roads, you get credit for against the state tax. There is actually a department in our company that spends practically 100% of their time on taxes, permitting, and licensing of vehicles. You can get in your personal automobile and drive from Saginaw to Florida with no questions asked regarding whether you have a Michigan license plate on or some other state. This is not true in all cases in our particular operation. We could with a Michigan license plate, but we have many vehicles that are licensed in the state of Ohio, and the state of Ohio licensed vehicles can't operate in the state of Georgia. Nor can power vehicles licensed in the state of Georgia operate in the state of Ohio. Now I'm speaking of the commercial vehicles. So you have these type of restrictions where two states don't have reciprocity between each other. We just entered into something new within the last 2 or 3 weeks where we are now prorate with the state of Illinois. Prior to that, we were what was termed reciprocity. And for a $1 plate, any vehicle that was licensed in Michigan could operate in the state of Illinois for the $1. The Illinois recognizing only the state of our home domicile offices, which is Michigan. Having line haul power licensed in Tennessee, Kentucky, Alabama, Ohio, it was hurting our Chicago operation where all of these vehicles